What's good, brothers and sisters? Welcome back to the Matching It Podcast, the podcast only for helping y'all single folks prepare for matching and blessing. Today, we're talking about the ego.
How to let go of your ego.
Gotta let go of that ego.
If you clicked on this video to watch it or are listening to this episode, it means that to some extent this topic resonates with you. So I want you to just observe that for a second.
Observe what you believe ego is. And there is an overall storyline, backstory of what, generally speaking, people identify as the definition of ego. And we usually think of someone that's very boastful, someone's very egotistical, very self-conscious, very just full of themselves, right? The primary emphasis being themselves. So there's a certain truth to that in the sense that the primary element of what an egotistical individual is the self, is an overemphasis and disproportionate emphasis on me, okay? Now, with that definition out there, we're all egotistical, guys. Let's just break the ice right here and there. You have an ego, I have an ego, we all have an ego. I would take it a step further to say that individuals that even identify with lack of confidence and saying, I can't get blessed, there's no one out there for me. Like, let's take two extreme personas or personalities or characters, if you will, of people going through the matching process. There's the overconfident, you know, just fresh off GPA, yo, I'm what it's about. No one's good enough for me. Maybe they don't say that out loud, but you know you're thinking it. No one's really that good enough for me. I'm awesome. I'm the stuff. Ego. That's the obvious form of ego. And then there's no one out there for me because I'm not good enough, right? This is also very common. I'm not attractive enough. I don't make enough money. I'm not this or that. I have too much baggage. I made too many mistakes. I can't. And there's an underlying feeling of unworthiness. And the other extreme is too much worthiness, right? Both ego, both forms of self. Why? Because the spotlight is on who? It's on me. It's on me. And I'm here to tell you guys that that's okay. It's okay. It's human behavior. It's normal. But I would take it an even further step deeper into the definition of having an ego, which is, I think the clearest definition I can give of ego is the inability to observe yourself, the inability to have self-awareness, to take a step back and observe yourself. Because we all have an ego. By those definitions of being selfish instead of selfless, by those definitions, we all have a freaking ego. We all do. The difference is your ability to identify and observe that ego in you. And as soon as you identify the ego and observe it, as soon as you do that, my friends, you have disconnected and disidentified, disassociated with it. And then you can decide, oh, that's not who I want to be. That's not me. Because your ego, your fallen nature, the false self, whatever you guys want to call it, Satan, if you will, that's not you. And as soon as you can pinpoint and be like, oh, that's that thing that's coming up, then you have immediately disidentified from it, and then you can take a different approach, which is the beauty of this whole thing. So the ego, the strongest individual with the strongest egos are not the ones that have an ego, but the ones that have an ego and are not able to identify it, to observe it, and see themselves clearly. When I say observe yourself, my friends, what I equate that to is the ability to see yourself from God's perspective, from a higher level, to be able to take a 10,000 foot step back and see yourself accurately, adequately, not based in fears and emotions, but factually, to see yourself as who you real are. Not the you that you pretend to be, not the you that you portray the world to be, that you are, not the you that you think you should be or shouldn't be, the you that is already there, that God created you to be, the you that God sees, the you that your loving parents see, the you that you know you already are and you just have to get out of the way of your own self, you, all right? The ability to observe that you and to disconnect, to disassociate with the ego and your fallen nature. That is most of the way of getting rid of the ego. And so when we say, oh, someone has a big ego, I mean, first of all, look at yourself, right? Look at yourself. Let me talk about myself for a second. Because maybe some of you guys are interested. It might be helpful to paint a picture. I identify in myself the ego in many different circumstances, in insecurity, in all kinds of different ways. And I've often beaten myself up about that and saying, oh, I have such a big ego, I'm so terrible, writer. But when I realized that the first step to identifying and disconnecting from the ego is just to notice it and observe it, then I was able to find moments in all the times where I feel like this ego is flaring up, I'd be able to stop and be like, oh yeah, that's not me. That's not who I want to be. That's actually nothing to do with me. That's just a protective mechanism. That is not anything that I want to do with my life, right? And for me individually, this has been kind of like a, I want to say it's a gift I have. I say that hesitantly because, you know, it's like if you're any bit self-aware, you'll start to question anything you believe about yourself or about others. You start to ask, like, is that true? And I think I'm self-aware to the point where I'll say something about myself and then I'll question myself, being like, is that true or is that just kind of an ego thing? And so what I'm saying here is that I have this ability to observe myself. I've always had this ability since I was very, very young. In fact, when I was 5 years old, I distinctly remember many, many times where I asked myself this question. When I was 5 years old, little Benji, here in North Carolina, just growing up, watching Pokemon and Digimon and Power Rangers and goofing around with my older brother Sammy, as all kids do, I remember thinking the question very often, why am I me? And I think about that now, the 5-year-old version of me asking that question, why am I me? It's not a common thing. Maybe some of you can relate, but I had this question, why am I me? And then I remember walking down the street. Often I would look at animals, I'd look at a dog, and I would think, why is that dog a dog? Right? Like this, why is that dog a dog? And then I would, after that, I would think, well, what if that dog one day woke up and was something else? What if I woke up one day and I was a dog? And then I would think, I don't want to be a dog. I want to be a bird, right? I look at the sky and see a bird. I'm like, I want to be a bird, not a dog, because then I can fly around and be free. And then I would think, well, I don't want to be a bird because I like being me, you know? And then I would think, well, if I like being me, maybe I'd like being someone else. And then I would think, I don't want to be someone else because I like my teeth. Let me back up again. When I was a child, I had really bad teeth, British and Japanese ancestry, okay? Really bad teeth. But I liked them because it felt familiar. You know, like your teeth are your teeth, but I would imagine waking up one day being someone else and having someone else's teeth, and that would freak me out. I'd be like, I don't want that. I like having my teeth because it's comfortable. And so I, anyways, I was observing this recently that I used to have these feelings and thoughts growing up as a kid, and it is actually, in hindsight, retrospectively, it has served me very well to be able to observe myself and think any thought I have, any belief I have, any emotion, importantly, anytime I'm angry, anytime I'm sad or lonely, I take a step back and I ask myself, is this true? Or is this something else? And because of that ability, if I do feel an ego flaring up, for example, if I feel like anytime I feel self-righteous or I want to condemn other people or judge someone or make a judgment, a snap judgment on somebody's behavior or their appearance or their actions or their words, if I make a judgment, I'll notice in myself and be like, oh, that's me being egotistical. That's the ego flaring up because I'm trying to be above somebody by making somebody smaller. And that's not who I am. That's not me. That's not the God that I am. That's in me. That's not how I'm created. And because I can do that, you see how interesting the ego is, because that's a very common behavior, is to make a decision about a family member, for example. My mom should be this way. She shouldn't talk like that, right? Interesting. Says who? Says who? Says you? Maybe. Objectively, sure. But is it helpful, first of all? And second of all, why do I have this judgment? And if you're really honest with yourself, it's like, oh, I'm just trying to let my ego take over. I actually don't care that much. I'm just trying to be right to make other people wrong, and that makes me feel better about myself. That's ego. Interesting. So that's how insidious and subtle the ego is. But as soon as you can identify that stuff, you've won. When you're in a marriage, when you're in a relationship, when you're in a matching process, and you guys are having conversations and things come up, and you feel stuff, stress, betrayal sometimes, annoyance, loneliness, difficult conversations. If you can have the ability through every up and down of life to just be able to take a step back and see yourself clearly, not emotionally, but see yourself accurately as God sees you, not even intellectually, not even analytically. I'm talking about see yourself with heart, with love. If you can do that, my friends, then you will dominate. Because most people are overthinking everything. Matching processes. Who do I marry? It's like you can't overthink that stuff. There's not the right answer. If you think about it logically for a second, because I know you guys are logical, I am too. If you're logically thinking, okay, you have maybe 1,000, hundreds of candidates out there you could possibly be in a matching process and get blessed with. How do you know? Who knows? Who the heck knows what the right decision is? You can't logic your way through it. You can't. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you think. You can't logic your way through this stuff. I was talking with a brother about his deal breakers, right? He's like, oh, I only have 2 deal breakers. He said, number one, she has to have the same kind of faith as me. Same faith. And number two, I have to be attracted to her physically, right? And then without skipping a beat, because I'm like this, I was like, number one, awesome. Number two, stupid. For context, guys, I was in an in-person workshop with this guy, and he's the kind of guy that can take this kind of older brother love. I was like, number one, awesome, perfect, aligned faith. Number two, attraction, stupid idea. And he was like, what? Like, but that's my deal breaker. That's what I want. And I was like, tell me why attraction is important. Tell me why. And he was like, kind of, you know, hesitantly was like, well, because isn't it important to feel attracted to your spouse? And I was like, says who? Says who? It's like, well, biologically, you know, because we want to have children. I was like, okay, says who? And I was like, sure, okay. But what happens if you're not attracted to that person anymore? What happens? If your entire relationship, in other words, is based on this really important thing to you that you're physically attracted to her, what happens when you're not attracted to her anymore? Which will happen actually at times. So that means the entire foundation of your relationship is based on something that is transient, okay? That can be eliminated quite quickly, quite quickly. You don't know what's gonna happen, physically speaking, externally speaking, you have no idea. She might change, you might change, more likely actually, you might just get bored. You might get bored of her, she might get bored of you, and you just are not attracted to each other. What then? Okay, so my point is that a self-aware, self-observing person will be able to say, okay, I believe my number two important thing is somebody that I'm physically attracted to. A self-aware person will say, why, first of all, and is that who I want to be? Is that actually important? Is actually based in anything factual and important to me? And by all means, guys, it's your prerogative. It's your life. It's your life. You can do what you want. In the end, you will take responsibility. You will have to take ownership of your decisions. You will, whatever the result is. But I'm giving this framework as a bit of older brother advice to tell you guys that, first of all, the real thing that matters is, are you guys aligned internally? Are you guys aligned internally? The external stuff, optional. Completely optional, but there are some serious, serious drawbacks and potential missed opportunities if you focus any of your energy on external stuff. There's some serious drawbacks, all right? Especially in a faith context, considering the blessing. So let's bring this back to ego. If you guys have an ego, which you do, which I do, it is not a matter of, oh, how I have a big ego, I have no ego. I've heard people say this, I have no ego, or that person has a big ego. And I just think, well, what about you? Even saying the words, I don't have an ego, there's something there, right? Or even saying the words that, you know, that person has an ego, it kind of implies some lack of self-awareness. If we're defining an ego as the inability to observe yourself and to kind of disproportionately focus on my attention and my energy on me, right? And not me as a loving me, more of a me based in contempt and based in fear, right? So to summarize this context for you guys, I think that one of the greatest ways to prepare for matching and blessing, and long-term to get married, be in a relationship, have children, is to simply develop the ability to be self-aware. Because with that will come lots of fruits, lots of beautiful lessons and developments in your life that you can't even imagine. It's just to be able to observe yourself, all right? And through that, you will have a reduction in fallen nature, ego in other words, a reduction in that evil satanic voice that I know is deep in your head, or in your heart, wherever that voice comes from. For some people it comes from different places, but wherever that voice comes from, you will see decrease in it if you're able to identify it and observe it and be like, okay, I want to be different when this happens. When I feel this way, I want to be different. When this person says this thing and it makes me feel that way, that reaction, I want to be different. And you start practicing that, and over time you will get better and better at it to the point where it's second nature. Lots of love to you guys. This was a different type of episode for a different topic, but it's something that I've seen a lot of people relate with, even if they don't really identify with having an ego. Yeah, I know some people don't like the word ego, and if you're in that case, then just replace it with a different word that you do understand, like fallen nature, or something like that. Evil spirits, whatever it is, guys. And I do want to ask if you guys can share this with one person that you know in your life, that if you have benefited from this content. That's it. I just want to be helpful to as many people as possible. That's the only reason that I make this content, is to be helpful. So if it is just one person, so we can spread some goodness with people. Also, if you want to message me directly and share something, struggle, victories, whatever is on your heart that you want to share with me, you can do so. BenjiUyama@gmail.com. Simple. All right, see you in the next episode.